Who says the war is over? The Bush administration has said it will accept nothing less than unconditional surrender, but what if there's no regime left to surrender? And who manages the transition from war to peace? In the studio to talk about the war's end is Shibli Tilhami, the Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Professor Tilhami, thanks for being with us again.
Pleasure.
And Elizabeth Stanley Mitchell is a fellow at the John M. Olin Institute for Strategic Studies at Harvard. She joins us from our studios in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And why is it so important to have somebody sign on the dotted line?
Most wars do end with a negotiation between the two sides, and having a surrender makes it clear to both sides that it is time to lay down arms and cooperate with the victor. Without someone at the top stepping forward to do that, it makes it difficult for the military forces and the people of the defeated country to know when it is time to move forward and cooperate and start the rebuilding process.
Mm-hmm. Professor Tilhami?
Well, you know, even without anybody surrendering, the real issue was what does the U.S. inherit? In this particular case, I mean, the minute the U.S. declares victory, it is responsible for the civilian population in Iraq. And the reality remains that the U.S. isn't ready for that.
Mm-hmm. What about, if I might ask you both, the what I'll refer to now just as the mystery about the whereabouts of Saddam Hussein or two of his sons? Does it matter if they're alive or dead, if captured or not? Professor Tilhami?
Personally, I don't think it matters much. In the case of bin Laden, for example, it matters more because it's a shadowy group and the mystique is about this organization that you can't see. Here, it's really a question of who's in power, and obviously it's going to matter only if it turns out that there is continuing resistance, shadowy resistance in Iraq, and then becomes more important.
Ms. Stanley Mitchell?
I would actually disagree a little bit. I think that we have been seeing people making a political decision in some of the small towns, various local sheiks, various local military leaders, most recently the commander of the Iraqi Fifth Corps having signed a letter of surrender in Mosul. In all of those places, the transition gets helped by having this having happened. The fact that there are people who said Saddam was meeting with his regime leaders in a mosque in Baghdad and that people nearby were kissing his feet, this suggests that the loyalties of the Iraqis in Baghdad are still in play. And I do think having a definitive answer about what happened to Saddam will help the process in that very large city.
A Marine officer arriving in Baghdad last weekend said, "We're the dog that caught the car. Now what do we do with it?"
Well, from the beginning, everyone who has looked at the case of the U.S. Role in Iraq understood that the most important part is going to be after. And I think here, when you look at it, there are two things going on. One is, what do you do in Iraq and who rules and how do you transition, which is complicated enough. But there is really a bigger issue here. There is a macro game being played here about the shape of American foreign policy, about what to do. Is Iraq a case of something? And what is going to happen beyond Iraq, so to speak. And I think the whole configuration of forces that is emerging, even about the shape of the civil administration in Iraq, the role that the U.S. plays there, should there be a role for the international community in managing Iraq, should it be primarily an American role, all of this isn't just about what is going to be good for Iraq. All of this is also about what thrust will there be in American foreign policy beyond Iraq.
We heard for so many weeks voices throughout the world and certainly in the region saying we don't want the United States to be imperialist, we don't want them to come in there and start running Iraq. And over the past couple of days, we're hearing people saying the U.S. has to establish order.
Well, it makes sense that people would be saying that. There is a lot of looting going on. There is a political vacuum that needs to be filled. And the United States and Britain are the two forces right now on the ground that could help to put together enough of a civil administration to provide some social order. The question is being able to quickly transition to having the international community or a regional presence or some other party involved in that process.
I have to ask before I lose sight of it, what do you do about the Ba'ath Party? One out of every 10 Iraqis are members of the Ba'ath Party.
Well, obviously, I think you've just got to have some amnesty except for those people who are guilty of particular crimes. And that is what's likely to happen.
Ms. Stanley Mitchell?
This process cannot be done, again, just by the United States. It needs to be done to some degree by the Iraqi people and by the United Nations or some other convening board for war crimes tribunals. Mm-hmm. It's really instructive, I think, to look back to the German example again. after the United States and other allies came in after World War II, there was a decision that some Nazi leaders did remain involved in rebuilding the country. It makes sense. They were part of the elites in business and in the military. You can't create a new society without people who have an intimate understanding of how that society works.
What sort of evidence, past the smiling faces as the tanks roll by, what kind of evidence, how are we to read the reaction of the Iraqi people? Where can they, in a sense, join up in this fight now?
Well, this is really a very central question. I mean, there's no question there is a sense of relief on the part of a great many Iraqis because of the repression. But obviously, they're also frightened. They don't know what's coming, and they want to be on the U.S. side. But there is also, don't underestimate the extent to which there is hostility toward the U.S. that is hidden for now. Mm-hmm. And that there are also many of these groups that you see are hiding or in flight that maybe are preparing to fight another day. I wouldn't be surprised if there will be all sorts of attacks on American forces in the next few months from underground. And that, by the way, I think is going to make it more complicated for the U.S. to transition from war fighting and security issues to the occupation and management of affairs for people to get out of the tank and to go mingle with the public. And that's going to be a real major issue in the next few weeks and months.
Shibli Telhami, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the book, The Stakes, America and the Middle East. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth Stanley Mitchell, a fellow at the John M. Olin Institute for Strategic Studies at Harvard and a professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Thank you.
You're welcome.